Morning, it is the John Gibson Morning Digestion for this September 11th. Okay, before that just turns off by itself, I'll turn it off myself. First of all, thanks to Cam Fleener for filling in on Monday. Did a great job, as you might expect. And, of course, the Velcro Pygmies are the house band of this program and favorite band. I saw Bob and Christine in New York with Little Megan. They're fantastic. For those of you who listened to the old show and wanted to hear about Bob and Christine, they're doing great. Bob's a big shot at Bloomberg. Christine's producing the Guy Benson show on Fox. And Little Megan seems like an adult at 6 years old. Okay, September 11th. What to say about September 11th that hasn't already been said? Well, there's probably not much. Worst terror attack ever. 3,000 Americans died. Just horrible sight of those people trapped above the place where the planes hit. There was no way for them to get out. They all died in the collapse of the two buildings. There were, I don't know, maybe 100 people. The New York Times figured later about 100 people who jumped out to avoid dying in the flames. I mean, just all around bad, bad day. It's just in New York. It's all done. I mean, it took 18 years, or maybe a little less, but the new PATH station is gorgeous. The Freedom Tower is all done. The construction barriers have been removed. The area around World Trade Center is, you know, back to being perfect in the sense of, construction completed. The memorials are there where the Twin Towers stood. You know, and I guess people think, you know, judging from the posts you see on social media, people think that maybe there's a danger of Americans forgetting. I don't think that there's a danger of Americans forgetting, and particularly those who were alive at the time. Although I do think that there's a generation that's been born since or right about that time who, recognize it was a pretty bad day, but kind of shrug off the outrage that many of us who witness it continue to feel. And in New York Times, I'm looking at the list. You know, their top op-ed piece today was the Muslim American mourning the life he led before 9/11. This is somebody who was, living in New York and was a, 11-year-old kid. And he was, didn't understand what was going on. He had kind of a normal life. Everybody was, nobody would pay much attention to the fact that he was Muslim or had a Muslim name. And all of a sudden, people did. And it just, just seemed to me that that was not the right op-ed to lead the op-ed page with. They also did a story in the Washington Post about the F-16 pilot, a woman who had orders to bring down Flight 93, but she didn't have any weapons. She was going to have to fly her F-16 into the plane. In other words, a kamikaze run. I saw my friend Roy Bell over the weekend. We were at a funeral for a friend of ours. And Roy is the guy, I've told the story many times on the anniversary of September 11th. He almost got killed twice. He and my friend JR stayed up late for Monday Night Football. Roy missed the morning ferry that would have got him to his meeting at the Windows on the World at World Trade Center. On time. Instead, he was late, but by just a little bit, 15 minutes or so, and was in the Sky Lobby, I think it's 79th floor or something like that, when the planes hit. He was actually in the elevator. The doors were closing when a plane hit. He jumped through the closing elevator door, his clothes singed, and a giant ball of fuel came down the elevator shaft as soon as he was out and incinerated everybody in the elevator. Then he went down the staircase with these smoking clothes, got in an ambulance, drove away. Well, first, it was told he couldn't go out on West Street because bodies were falling. Then he got in an ambulance, drove away, and the ambulance stopped, said, "I got to go back," and Roy got out. And the ambulance went back and was crushed in the falling building. So he escaped with his life twice. I saw him. He's in great shape, you know. Got an 11-year-old daughter. Life is good. You know, didn't work out for 3,000 others in the same way. Okay, so let's move on. But, you know, I mean, all right, so I'll just jump ahead. You know, I don't know what Trump was thinking, but, you know, inviting the Taliban to Camp David the week of 9/11 was a real fuck up. Come on. That isn't even close to right. I mean, negotiating with the Taliban is one thing. I think it's stupid because they're never going to abide by any agreement they make. And I, you know, they're just not. And they are the ones who hosted Al Qaeda and Mullah Omar. Well, Mullah Omar was the Taliban, but Al Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and they'd do it again. You know. I understand. Look, 18 years in Afghanistan, it's a long time. I think you kind of just have to write Afghanistan off the same way that Alexander the Great's soldiers did when they killed him rather than hang around Afghanistan, which he wanted to do, or go on to India. The British had to give up on it. The Russians had to give up on it. We're going to have to give up on it. There's a book called Into the Land of Bones about the history of people trying to tame Afghanistan. It just doesn't work. I mean, you know, any society that plays a game of essentially polo with the severed head as the ball, you know, I guess you just have to side fuck them, you know, and you know, if they do anything screwy, that obliterate them, I guess. Anyway, Trump, Frank Bruni, the New York Times, imagines a post-Trump presidency and says we'll never get rid of him. And he's probably right. I mean, if Trump, whether his post-presidency is in 2024 or 2020, doesn't really matter. He's going to go right on tweeting and saying things and carrying on, and he's not going to be quiet like Obama or Bush. I mean, you can just forget it. So Frank Bruni is right about that. Trump is taking aim at homelessness in L.A. and San Francisco, probably because it was on Fox News. That's in the New York Times. He wants out of Afghanistan. I can't blame him for that. This New York Times piece is an annotation of the recent Taliban killings. It's a lot. Washington Post polls again say he'd lose to the Democrat. They were wrong the first time. Are they right this time? I don't know. Washington Post is Mark Thiessen, who's a very conservative columnist at the Washington Post, the only one, actually. Inviting the Taliban to Camp David was worse than an outrage, Mark says. Market Watch opinion, this is sort of a Wall Street Journal thing. Market Watch opinion guy, Trump's foreign policy proves he's a left winger. Bolton, New York Times, Trump was complaining recently that Bolton was too hawkish. Well, he's very hawkish. There's no doubt about that. Washington Post says Bolton was leaking, dragging the vice president into his fights, etc. New York Times' Bret Stephens is the perfect John Bolton critic, one who likes him but still finds ways to fault him. Politics, Biden and Warren meet tomorrow night in that debate in the New York Times. This interesting piece in Politico, the Biden camp thinks the media just doesn't get how he is the guy. Well, what they mean by the media is young woke media, who, you know, find him to be gaffetastic in everything he says and how young they are and how woke they are and that they just don't get it, that that's not the rest of the country. And they may have a point there. Politico talks about Biden's deceptive lead. It'll fall apart first time he loses in, let's say, Iowa or someplace. New York Times, a moderate Democrat in North Carolina, who was challenging the Republican. The Republican won by, well, New York Times called it narrowly, but it was 2%. The Republican won in North Carolina, but the New York Times says it's a warning for Trump. Social justice warriors, slaves built the Virginia Theological Seminary. Now it is paying $1.7 million in reparations. Apparently that's going on quite a bit, especially in Virginia. Tech, New York Times, a European regulator who will ride herd on big tech. This is kind of a profile of this woman who's the digital regulator for the European Union. And, you know, the story's in the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post as well. New York Times, gig workers will be employees, not contractors under new California law. That's also in the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post and San Francisco Chronicle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. New York Post, Apple's new phones and watch. So Apple had one of these unveilings that they're famous for, or Steve Jobs is famous for. There are three new iPhones, the iPhone 11, the iPhone Max, iPhone 11 Max, and the iPhone 11 Max Pro. Don't ask me to explain. I don't know. New York Times columnist says the Apple keynote has to end. This is where they go on stage and, you know, they're wearing the perfect clothes and they introduce the product, you know, the old Steve Jobs routine. I mean, I first saw this in San Francisco Symphony Hall when I was still a reporter in San Francisco, which, you know, I guess we're talking about sometime in the 1980s. I just thought it was a cult. And I didn't want anything to do with it. I stayed away from Apple products for a long time. And now I realize, you know, Apple products are great, but I still don't like these things. And neither did this columnist. So it's got to end. They have to stop doing these things. They've become sort of a parody of the original Apple keynotes. Wall Street Journal, electric cars dominate the European auto show, but they're, you know, all the big automakers are making them. All the Europeans are making them. The Volkswagen guy said the electric car won't succeed naturally. It needs government help. In other words, people don't want them. And the government's going to have to force people to buy them. It does not seem like a smart way to go, but that's what's happening. And it's because of tailpipe emissions. You know, the emission standards have gotten to be so onerous, there really is only one way to beat them, and that's electric cars. So then, the emissions will be coming out of power plants, not tailpipes. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, New York Times. Obama, the Obamas, are trying to crush this black woman who happens to have trademarked the name of her company, A Higher Ground, that the Obamas want for their production company, Higher Ground Productions. So they're actually suing to vacate her trademark and take it for themselves. I don't know. I mean, you know, the fact that it's a black woman, you know, and they're claiming she didn't use it for a while because she was trying to get her company going. It was probably true. She didn't use it for a while, but, you know, so what? The Russian spy story, I was a little confused about it yesterday. Okay, the Russian spy story is true. We did extract a Russian spy who was spying on Putin for us in 2017. CNN said that it was because the CIA was crazed that Donald Trump was going to reveal his identity and get him killed. The CIA has rebuked that story, as well as Mike Pompeo did. But in any case, the guy, his name known, was living in suburban D.C. under his own name. He's now been moved. But I think that was a little casual, considering how the Russians go assassination crazy every once in a while. The Skripals in London are a perfect case. And also, Wall Street Journal has this story about a Chechen rebel who was living in Berlin and was assassinated just recently. And the assassin was caught. And they think it was Russia. It was Putin having him killed. Washington Post, why is White Claw so popular? Gender fluidity is the answer. I don't know. But anyway, White Claw is popular. Both bros and women love White Claw. It used to be beer was for men, wine was for women. No, now they're both drinking White Claw. I don't know. It's apparently it's hard seltzer, so it's seltzer water with some kind of cheap vodka added. You know, I mean, that's what I drink, but it's not. It's Tito's. I don't think I should or would drink it with some kind of awful cheap vodka. It'd just make me sick. Okay, so where are we at here? That appears to be all of the news. Once again, you know, sort of remember 9/11. It's a day that will live in infamy, to borrow FDR's phrase. And as long as people remember it. I mean, it really is amazing. I rode the train, the PATH train from Jersey City, Exchange Place in Jersey City to World Trade Center, the very first day it opened. And there were people sobbing on the train as you came out of the dark tunnel into the daylight of the hole in the ground. I mean, it took a while for them to open that train. They had to, you know, to repair the tunnel And by the time the train opened and you could ride it into the city again, the site at World Trade, the bathtub was completely open. The debris had been removed, and it was it was a gory scene. Now it's all, I mean, it's beautiful. Enzo Piano. World Trade Center station, the PATH station, that beautiful white thing that looks like the bones of a bird. It's all perfect. You know, the whole thing is done in white. You wonder, geez, how long is it going to take for this to get all grimy? Everything else downtown is grimy. Why not this place? And then, you know, the Freedom Tower is all done, and the walkways around it are all done. And, you know, if you live through the construction as I did, it's just amazing to see. I mean, it really, really is amazing and worth going to see. Anyway, so try to remember it today. Yeah, a little Johnny Rivers. Okay, podcast a little bit later.